Thanks for listening to Outcast World. You lock your front door, don't you? You wouldn't go out and leave the front door open. Well, that's essentially what you're doing when you're not using a VPN. Right now, your data is being tracked, stored, and sold by loads of people. For a lot of people that are listening to this show, that is not just annoying, it can also be very risky. NordVPN fixes it. It's fast, it's reliable, it's number one for consumers, and it takes less time to set up than ordering a takeaway. Outcast World listeners can get NordVPN for under £3 a month. That is up to 75% off. Just go to outcastworld.net. The link's at the top. Turn it on. Forget about it. Make yourself safer online with the number one NordVPN for under £3 a month at outcastworld.net. It's Outcast World. Hello. Now, this week, a part of queer history that's barely being told. During the AIDS crisis, and we've heard about that from a number of different perspectives down the years, haven't we? But never, I think, from this perspective. As many as half the patients on some London wards were Irish. Homosexuality remained illegal in Ireland until 1993, and many queer Irish people came to Britain seeking safety, acceptance, and, frankly, healthcare. Mammy's House turns that history into a new black comedy built from real testimony. And today I'm lucky enough to be joined by co-writer and performer Derek Murphy and priest and veteran AIDS activist Bernard Lynch, whose own story helps shape the play.
Queer politics.
When Farage says jump, Labour might say how high.
And it's not true. It's offering people false hope.
Sex.
Dating apps have become a breeding ground for the worst of human behaviours.
And culture.
What do you want, home? We get together, we be simple. Simple. Be simple for me.
He will, like, go nosh himself off.
This is Outcast World.
Where did the idea for Mammy's House start, and why now in particular?
It actually started quite a few years ago now. It was back in 2020, the year that we all, I think, would rather forget. Very early on, in the very first lockdown, I completely by random happened upon a talk online being given by Dr. Joseph Healy, and it was about LGBT Irish migrants during the AIDS crisis. And I had sort of never heard of the AIDS crisis from an Irish point of view before, so I found just the topic very interesting. So I went to this online talk and I listened to Joseph, and the information that they were giving, like, absolutely blew me away. It really did shock me. Like, some of the things that they were saying were that some of the AIDS wards in London during the 80s had 50% Irish people in them. Homosexuality obviously was illegal in Ireland until 1993. So a lot of people who needed to get any healthcare sort of had to leave Ireland to try and get any healthcare. So a lot of this kind of stuff, it really did surprise me. So I sort of went, right, this is interesting. I'll go off and see if I can do a bit of research about it and find out a bit more. And there's very little. There's not a lot of information out there about it. Like, we hear of things like It's a Sin, the program that was on a couple of years ago about the AIDS crisis, and it was absolutely phenomenal and it did amazing things. And I did amazing things for the queer community and the HIV AIDS community. But one thing that somebody commented on was that it was unusual there was no Irish characters in it, because actually it wouldn't have been accurate for the scene of at the time, because a lot of Irish queer people were here. So I just found it really interesting, and I thought, right, well, if nobody's telling this story, we will. And now here we are.
Someone's got to do it. I didn't know that, really didn't know that fact. You just told me about 50% of the people on some of the AIDS wards in the 80s in London were from Ireland. But I guess the reasons you've just given it makes perfect sense, doesn't it? You and Amy are childhood friends from Cork. So how did that shape the writing?
I think it's quite easy, because obviously she's one of my best friends and has been for many, many years. So working together is quite easy. We can sort of say things to each other that you may not be willing to say to people you're not so close with. And plus, we work quite well together. And she has this very strong interest in this as well, and a very strong interest in LGBT rights and LGBT history. So we worked well in that respect as well. And then she really specifically also wanted to look at it from a woman's perspective, and specifically what the lesbian community did for the gay community at the time, which was a death that can never be repaid because what they did was phenomenal and no amount of thanking them was ever going to be enough. But that is a strong part of the story in Mammy's House as well. And that was something Amy was adamant about. So I think from both our perspectives and what we felt strongly about and what we really wanted to include, I feel like it's really made the piece even stronger. So the fact that we've known each other for so long, it just works to our benefit, thankfully.
You play Mammy. Barry, like, what's it like performing a role that was built from real testimony like Bernard's?
There's a very, very strong feeling of responsibility. I mean, I've been working as an actor for years now, and I've done the gamut of amazing parts. And I don't think I've ever done anything quite similar to this before. Like, none of these characters are based on a real person. They're not one specific person. They're a lot of an amalgamation of a lot of the different stories we heard and a lot of the different people we heard and different aspects from different people. But again, because we're sort of telling a story that really hasn't been told before, there is a massive feeling of responsibility to it. And we want to tell the story right. We want to do them justice. I said the other night to Bernard when he was actually at the show, like, we are standing on the shoulders of giants, and it's only because of what they went through and what they did that we can enjoy the privileges that we have today in the LGBT community. So really, we wanted to show that level of respect and make sure that we were doing justice to the story that we're trying to tell. We hope we are. The feedback we're getting, it appears that we are. And hopefully the people will continue to think so.
You've said that you want to stop these stories being disposable. What did that mean?
It's sort of like a lot of these things, especially because when I went looking to research it and there's so little information about it there, it could so easily get lost to time. It could so easily get lost in history. A lot of these people are not here to tell the story themselves. And Ireland still has as amazing a place as Ireland is, it has amazing qualities. There are still some negatives. It is a country that tends to sweep things under the carpet and sort of doesn't want to deal with things. It has been sort of tackling that in recent years, so things are changing. But unless people are willing to actually get up and talk about it and actually willing to put it in focus and to force people to sort of admit what was going on, it will just get forgotten. And it's too important. It's too important to forget, you know, and these people deserve more than that. They don't deserve to be forgotten. They deserve to be remembered.
So what was it like premiering the show in London specifically rather than in Ireland, maybe in Dublin?
Well, weirdly, right, because, I mean, it's an Irish story. It really, really is an Irish story, but it's an Irish story in the UK. Like, the UK has one of the highest Irish diasporas in the world, obviously, because we're only there. For just across the way. So there's a huge, huge community of Irish people in the UK. And so it's not just an Irish story. It's an English story. It's a UK story. It's just a story about people. It's a story about history. So it's not really just for Irish people. We really do hope to tour in Ireland in the future, because it really does feel like it's an important story that needs to be heard there as well. But it is equally as important that it's heard here, you know, and it is about people who had to leave Ireland because they couldn't find acceptance. They couldn't find safety there. They had to come somewhere where they could possibly discover that. And I mean, it wasn't perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but it was a better option than them staying in the situations they were in. And it's just the reality of it. Do you know, I mean, I know it wasn't nice. No, it's not a great view of Ireland. It's also not a great view of history. But it is what it is. It is the story that happened, and it is the story that needs to be told.
Bernard, take us back. I really want to know, like, the experience of what it was like being a priest at the height of the AIDS crisis.
AIDS ended. Nationalities, religions, race, culture. It did not discriminate. And, you know, to piggyback on Derek's point there, you know, there isn't a lot about the Irish. Well, I worked with many Irish here in London. I worked at London Lighthouse from 1992. And, you know, we didn't list the Irish, but Derek, they were there. Women and men, and the country of my origin, which I ran out of, do its job very simply. And they came here in desperation, women and men. And, you know, it is still the disease without compassion at a level. And if this play is going to do anything profound, to my mind, is going to move us on another, I would like to think another mile, but even if it does a few inches, to get people who have the virus or who have had sons, daughters, lovers, friends who died of HIV/AIDS, to acknowledge and be able to talk about it, then it has done a miraculous job. And having seen it twice, I think it's one of the most profound and authentic expressions of that era, which I've lived through, which I've lived all my life. My whole life has been, quote unquote, HIV/AIDS from 1981 to the present time. And this is a beautiful, I was going to say, a beautiful gift is the right word, by Derek and Amy, and particularly the actors, including Derek, of course, who lived that out. And I met them, you know, the night before last, and they were so moved themselves by the experience that they moved me to tears. And I wasn't happy being there. I had to go and see it twice out of respect for Derek and the desire to help in every way I could. But the second night it was easier, but it's not exactly, it's black comedy, if that's the correct political word, mm-hmm. but it's also profoundly a statement that where there is no love, put in love, and there you will find love. Where there is no love, put in love, and there you will find love. And that's what Amy and Derek have brought to the stage. We were loveless. Nobody has any idea how much we were hated for who we are and loved for who we were not. And okay, I'm not HIV positive as far as I know, but I was labeled as the AIDS priest, and that was no compliment, I can tell you, at the time. I lost my job as a priest because I came out in favor of gay and gay rights, etc., in New York, even though, quote unquote, at some level, I am indeed still a priest, but the Catholic Church has not employed me since 1985, when I was at the height of the AIDS pandemic. They sacked me because I was saying stuff like safer sex, gay rights or human rights, et cetera, et cetera. So this is great. This is wonderful. I'm delighted to have lived long enough to see people like Derek and Amy, much younger. I'll say with a smile if you could see me, much younger, moving on. And, you know, maybe they're on the backs of joints. I would never use that. I got involved in this because my brothers were dying. I don't see myself. But the giants now are Derek and Amy and the people who are bringing this to people who never experienced it or don't know about it.
So at the height of the AIDS crisis in New York in 1985, you're fired by the Catholic Church. What do you think, when people say nowadays that if Jesus was around now, that's precisely the sort of work he would have done?
I've always believed that, and I believe religion is a very private matter. But very often in institutional religion, Jesus, to my mind and in my humble opinion, wouldn't recognize institutional religion if it sat on his face. I mean, my gosh, institutional religion has been so responsible and will stay with our own community, LGBTQIA+ and AIDS community. I mean, we couldn't find a church to hold a funeral in New York. You know, I mean, we did eventually, but I mean, all our early funerals were at Redden's Funeral Home on 14th Street, as most of our funerals here in London were at the London Lighthouse. Religion has very little to be proud of when it comes to HIV/AIDS. Way back in the 80s, I did a documentary with Channel 4 called AIDS, A Priest Testament. And I said that AIDS will judge the church. The church will be judged by AIDS. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I mean, I'm quite embarrassed to say I'm a Catholic at that level. The record is absolutely atrocious. Yes, there were good people, nuns giving out condoms, et cetera, et cetera. But the institution itself used all of its might to spread AIDS. Blamed for the disease. You deserve AIDS is what came out of the Vatican because you are behaving immorally. Imagine to say that and people dying. I'm still outraged when I think of that and repeat. That's totally, utterly, as you would say there, un-Christian, un-Christ-like.
What drove you to move to London and then set up a support group for gay priests?
Well, I was going back and forth to London to quote-unquote help in this ministry. I'm calling it ministry because I'm a priest, but it wasn't a ministry in any ministerial sense. I spent more time changing diapers and wiping up crap from young fellas' bottoms than I did anointing them or blessing them or anything like that. So I was coming back and forth. I kind of had run out of steam in New York in that there's a long history, but I won't bore you with it. I got a contract over here with an organization called CARA, which is Care and Resources for People with AIDS, an Anglican organization, and they asked me would I come over and do pastoral work attached to London Lighthouse. So, you know, I needed a change from New York. I was burned out by New York, but I still couldn't do anything else, and I certainly couldn't walk away. So I came over here and got involved, and, you know, I'm an Irishman and I'm proud in my own way. I'm also embarrassed by our history in terms of this issue, very much so. But when I got here, I was astounded at the way people with AIDS were treated here, quote unquote, by the NHS. I saw more people die in corridors of New York City, the richest city in the world. Women and men die in corridors than I did in hospital beds. I came here, the Middlesex Hospital was like a walk into paradise. People were still dying, but they were dying with dignity and human respect. Thank you, NHS. Thank you, UK.
How closely did you two work together on getting some of these details right?
Bernard actually was one of the first people that we interviewed. So the very first person we interviewed was Joseph Healy, because he had obviously given the talk that initiated all of this in the first place. And he actually connected us with Bernard. And this was a few years ago. And now, cut to now, Bernard is a very close friend of ours, which I'm absolutely delighted about. And we've worked together quite a bit on other events and other things. And he's always been incredibly, incredibly supportive of us, this project, me, just everything we're up to in general. He's always been available for us to text, call, ask questions to. We're forever asking him things at various different events. He's been incredible during this. As he said, he's been to the show twice already, and we completely understand that it's not an easy watch for him or the other people who have taken part in the research as well, who've come along to see it. So, like, we can be thanking him for the rest of our days, and I hopefully he'll hear it. Thank you, Bernard. Thank you. We love you.
That's okay. That's okay. I need a pint.
I'll buy you all the pints you want.
What do you think a modern audience, especially like a younger LGBTQ plus audience, most needs to kind of understand about this period?
Honestly, I think they just need to really have a realization that it happened and that these were real people that it happened to. It's not a story in a TV show. It's not, you know, a tale in some movie. it's real people that went through real trauma in order for us to be the people that we are today. Like a few weeks ago, I marched in Pride here in London with a huge number of my friends, Bernard included, and his partner, and my partner. And we were all dressed up and we were covered in glitter and dancing around to music. And there's a reason why that happened. Those rights were not just handed to us. They were fought for. There was blood, sweat and tears poured into that. And it was from people like Bernard. So what I really want people to take away from this is, as I mentioned earlier, we are standing on the shoulders of giants. They deserve our respect. They deserve our acknowledgement. And they deserve millions and millions and millions of pounds. So give them money.
Well, thanks to both of you for that chat. And of course, Mammy's House is on at upstairs at the Gatehouse, Highgate, 1st to the 13th of September. Where can people get tickets?
So you can get them on the Upstairs at the Gatehouse website or go on our socials, which is Mammy's House Play. So on Instagram or Facebook or any of those. And yeah, we're running till the 13th. Come along. We'd love to see you.
Bernard, Derek, thank you so much.
Thank you, Graham, very much.
Stay with me, this is incredibly simple. If you've ever used Grindr, Googled something rather personal, or posted anything political, your data is already being tracked and sold. Think about that. A VPN can make you a lot safer. NordVPN takes about 2 minutes to set up, one click to turn on, and it just runs in the background. There's no effort after that. It's consistently voted number one across a load of metrics for consumers. It's fast, it's secure, and there's no drop-offs. Outcast World listeners can get up to 75% off NordVPN right now, which brings it down to under £3 a month. Go to outcastworld.net. Top of the page, tap the link, then you're done. Outcastworld.net for up to 75% off NordVPN.